once again, looking back through the files of the Bunyip. And this week we're reading Wednesday, October 30, 2024. My name is Kay and I'm one of your readers along with Jeanette. Hello, Jeanette.
Hi, Kay.
And we're down in the lower ground floor of the Gawler Civic Centre, and in the background are volunteers Les and Jill. And they've just given the thumbs up and the waves and they're quietly working away on adding documentation to the incredible system that enables people to actually track down more obscure documents that we have here in Gawler. So it's a really fantastic program. Anyway, I'll kick off with 150 years ago. Snake bite. A little girl, about 13 years old, was returning from the River Para, about 2 miles from her home, with her cows, when, in going through some long grass, she trod upon a large black snake. The reptile immediately turned and bit her just above the ankle severely. With great presence of mind, the girl tied her handkerchief tight around her leg above the bite and made for a house not far off. The child could not get quite there, but called out, and Mrs. Bain, seeing some accident had occurred, ran to her and carried her into her house. A mounted messenger was dispatched to Lindock for Dr. Richter, who had with him an instrument for injecting liquid ammonia into veins in case of snake bite. This he used with great success, for although she remained in a critical state after the doctor came, had the ammonia not been injected, nothing could have saved the child's life.
It
ammonia.
Yes.
Wow,
yep.
That's interesting. So you've got something to add to that.
Yep. So that was done in Victoria a couple of times with success.
Wow.
When everything else was failing, they saved a station master who'd been bitten by a black snake in Victoria with liquid ammonia injected into the bloodstream.
Into the bloodstream.
And
wow.
Yes. It sounds horrific now.
It does.
And so the first anti-venom, so I read that and I was curious when was the first anti-venom. It was developed in France in 1895, but it didn't really become the first anti-venom was distributed for tiger snake in Australia in the 1930s. It took a long time.
Wow.
And they weren't reliable. They still can cause anaphylactic shock. So the anti-venom treatment can kill people as well.
Oh, my goodness.
So it is still very dangerous.
It's scary, yeah.
And that's why very select hospitals only have the anti-venoms.
Wow.
And they don't store for very long, so it's a...
No, this is where Peter Merchant with his business up in the Barossa Valley was so valuable.
Mm.
He used to base the serum, though, on the blood of pregnant mares.
Yes, they inject it into horses.
And that seemed to work because we had some friends that were tied up with that and one of our horses ended up being one of the mares that they were using to extract the blood from. I mean, not to the point that it would actually be bad for the horse.
Yeah.
It just meant that she had a foal every other year or every year.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that was his business. I don't know whether they're still doing that, Venom Supplies, I think he was called. It was quite remarkable
very
the work
important.
He did.
Yeah. So, well, in this period, 1880s, there were estimated 11 deaths a year from snake bite in Australia.
Goodness. That's a lot. That's more than sharks. So,
yes.
Jill, you've got something to add?
Yes.
Come over here and talk into the...
Okay, so Venom
Supplies, was
Venom
it?
Venom Supplies, they're in Tanunda. They collect and they milk snakes for the venom. We had a snake in our backyard. We rang them up. They came out. They leapt upon the snake and put it in a bag and charged us $176.
For really? For the privilege of taking snake to get
and
the venom?
And then we went up to their place and they said, oh, can we see the snake? And they said, oh, no, it's in quarantine at the moment, but it's a really good quality one and they're really happy with it. And it's still going. And then the venom is then used to make the anti-venom.
But,
and one of the things they do is it's injected into horses.
Yes, yes, I didn't know that before.
Yeah, and then the, I think it's the white blood cells that they remove. That's how they make the anti-venom.
So they're still going?
Yes.
Oh, that's good to know.
Yes, it is, because it's really important.
Thanks, Jill.
Thank you.
Sue, we're a team here, aren't we?
We are a team. So 100 years ago, Poppy Day. Of course, and we're coming up for that time, aren't we? Sale of poppies will be held in Gawler to assist distressed diggers and their dependents. The local branch of the RSA is responsible for the raising of funds in Gawler, and public assistance is needed to help make the appeal successful. Residents are asked to remember all work is voluntary and every shilling given will assist to give relief to those who helped the nation in the past. Alright, so I wonder if that's a typo. It should be RSL. Or maybe they changed their name. I didn't look that one up. But yes, of course, war was still very fresh in people's memories.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
And the damage was just so ongoing for the returned soldiers.
Well, it went on forever.
Yes, yeah.
I've got, stories. We've all got stories.
Yes.
We've got stories of tragedies.
Yes.
I don't know any family that wasn't...
touched.
Wasn't touched.
Yeah.
50 years ago, crisis month for district farmers. Lower North farmers will know within a month whether stem rust, already evident in most cereal crops, will cause widespread damage for the second year in succession. The unseasonal heavy rain in the past few weeks has alarmed farmers in the district, who last year lost an estimated $4 million because of the rust. If humid conditions were experienced over long periods, the damage could be greater than last year. Rust in its early stages was most noticeable in oats, although wheat crops were also widely affected. And now, of course, they breed the wheat to not
be rust. Yes, it was a big concern. 150 years ago, Smithfield Farmers Club, a lot of their talks were about rust and how to prevent rust. And they were talking then about being able to breed rust-resistant strains, but, of course, they weren't at that stage. I think Dr. Schomburg was advocating that as a method of resisting rust. So, 25 years ago, no way, that's what we think of republic. Local residents will vote resoundingly against a republic in Saturday's referendum, echoing nationwide sentiments that the Queen should be retained as head of state. A survey of Gawler shoppers conducted by the Bunyip last week showed 62% or 67 people of 108 people questioned would vote no to the republic. It's hardly resounding. Now, understanding the Republican campaign, Australia not being mature enough and the cost to change from the present system were put forward as reasons why people would vote no. Yes, it was a complicated, maybe overcomplicated, I think, proposing. But also I think Australians look at America and we don't want a system like that. Well, some maybe do, I don't know.
I think until we actually know what it looks like and sounds like and feels like, people are going to be suspicious, and as you know, that COVID report that came out has said that people have lost their faith or confidence and are now more sceptical about decisions, rightly or wrongly. I think they'll be even more suspicious of those sorts of massive changes to the Constitution. There's a great cynicism. And you can trace it back and say, oh, this is because of the Russian interference in the 2016 US election and all that sort of stuff. It's whatever the basis.
I think
it's
a cultural shift and there's lots of reasons for that.
Well,
one is definitely social media.
Oh, well, I noticed several years ago that we were sort of going into a new wowserism, and that's certainly becoming very evident.
It is, yes.
Anyway, never mind. Mm-hmm. 10 years ago, electoral storm, and I had to look at that heading twice because it looked like electrical storm.
Yes, I did too.
So, electoral storm. Lightning has struck twice in the Gawler Council mayoral elections, with candidates Karen Redman and John Bolton lodging complaints against each other. The electoral storm started after Mr. Bolton posted links on Facebook to an interview with the Bunyip's editor, Rob McLean. In the interview, Mr. Bolton refers to Mrs. Redman's links with what he termed the Gang of Four and her alleged campaigning with an Australian Labor Party member. Also raising the ire of Mrs. Redman was a cartoon Mr. Bolton has circulated, which portrays her as a puppet of fellow councillor Adrian Shackley. Mrs. Redman lodged a complaint with the Electoral Commission's essay last Thursday, which was promptly followed by a counter complaint from Mr. Bolton.
I remember all that.
Oh, it's all so dreary. Anyway,
yes.
Yeah, let's not talk about local government on.
Yes.
Interesting times. And so that ends the looking back for this week, Jeanette.
Yes, it
another
does.
Interesting one as always. And we'll speak next week.
We will indeed, Kay.
Bye for now.
Bye. For all life.